British Public Radio. Current Affairs.
Robin Niblett here, Director of Chatham House, and absolutely delighted to be welcoming former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright to Chatham House. Dr. Albright, it's such a pleasure to have you come and join us today for our Dillon Lecture later on. Let me just kick off with something quite specific. If you had to pick two or three areas where, if you were Secretary of State again, you would say, this is where I think Europe and America can work together best right now, what would be at the top of your list?
Well, great. First of all, it's wonderful to be with you and wonderful to be at Chatham House. I am a believer in the importance of a U.S.-European partnership because we have so much in common and we can do an awful lot of good if we are working together. And if I were to pick out three topics, they basically are in a very similar region and a lot in the Middle East, I think. Both our countries and continents have done a lot of work in the Middle East previously, and we have a history, some of it good, some of it bad, but we clearly have a lot in common. And I do think that, for instance, for starters, the Israeli-Palestinian issue and the role of the quartet, and President Obama and Secretary Kerry are clearly putting a lot of emphasis on that and seeing it as a place where the Europeans could be very, very helpful. The other area would be also in the same place, which is Syria, where clearly terrible things are happening within Syria itself, and also the effect of Syria on the region. Kind of, I talk about it as an ink blot that is spreading. Yeah. And while we may have somewhat dissimilar views at the moment in terms of how much to do in Syria, I do think that working together there is absolutely essential. And part of our relationships and partnerships is that we're able to talk about what to do, how to do it, how we interact with each other, as well as the Syria issue itself. Yep. The third one is also in the same area, and that's Iran. And I do think the P5 plus one talks, which are basically being led by Baroness Ashton, is something that is a very important area of cooperation, because we have the same goal, and the fact of the EU being able to bring in a larger picture on it, I think, is very important.
People have often talked about the US and Europe, as they look at international challenges together, as having almost a division of labor. If I were just to take you back to one of those, for example, you have at the top of your list the Arab-Israeli conflict. And I think when Secretary Kerry was here, William Hague, Foreign Secretary, made an absolute priority in those conversations and in the press conference afterwards of highlighting from a UK perspective how important the Israeli-Palestinian conflict was in his list of issues. What do European nations bring to the table to try and move that process forward?
First of all, I think a great deal of experience in the region. I think different from the American one, but a great deal of on-the-ground knowledge. I think some of it also the capability of offering some economic help and issues where, in fact, some suggestions can be made. You know, America's in a very peculiar position always, is we're damned if we do, damned if we don't. And if some of the suggestions that we have are made too strongly, they are discounted. If they aren't made at all, then we, you know, where are you? And I do think that this is kind of a partnership where members of the EU can come up with different suggestions, bridging ideas. The truth is that only the parties can solve the problem ultimately, the Israelis and Palestinians with each other. But I think bringing in the larger picture of the Europeans, of, you know, making clear that Israel will not be isolated, that Israel has, that we are concerned about the security of Israel and the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people, as a kind of multiplied message, I think makes a big difference.
And I think on Iran, as you rightly pointed out, the U.S. and Europe actually have been really in lockstep, certainly since the Obama administration, maybe the George W. Bush's second phase. We've, in Europe, tightened up our sanctions enormously. But at the moment, so long as we're in the diplomatic phase, we seem to be in lockstep. Do you see a way out of the Iran problem? Is it in our hands or is it in Iran's hands? Each time the negotiations start, they seem to get stuck, and the clock is ticking.
It's obviously in both hands. I mean, I think part of it, the Iranians are about to have an election, which nobody knows exactly. I mean, we do realize it will not be one where there will be democratic powers that take over. But trying to figure out the relationship between the government and the supreme leader is going to be something that will be interesting and that will make a difference. I think that part of the slowness in Almaty during the P5 plus one talks was a little bit of treading water until they figured that out. They need to understand that, the Iranians that is, that in fact ultimately the only solution is for them to abide by the non-proliferation treaty which they signed, and to live up to their obligations under that, and they have to realize that it's better for them. And part of the issue that I've learned from talking to Iranians and behind the scenes is that they see this as a point of national pride, that they are capable of being a nuclear power, and so they have to see their national pride in something else. And we have to be able to have the imagination of holding out a variety of options for them to live up to their international obligations.
So in a way, we're having to kind of manage the situation as much as try to fix it and give the Iranians an opportunity perhaps to shift their standpoint. I wanted to use that as a transition to a kind of second set of questions and draw on your experience and your professorial responsibilities, if I can call it that. Diplomacy and how you see diplomacy. There is a caricature that Americans see diplomacy as doing things, and Europeans are criticized sometimes by Americans having diplomacy as kind of managing and maybe not fixing a problem and kind of living with it. A bit of Mars and Venus. Is that an unfair caricature? How would you define the real power of diplomacy?
Well, diplomacy is obviously the oldest way that countries talk to each other. I teach a course at Georgetown in which I say foreign policy is basically one country trying to make others understand their national interests. That's what it's about. So what are the tools? And the course I teach is called the National Security Toolbox. And we look at diplomacy and we look at the economic tools of trade and aid, the sticks and carrots, and then the threat of the use of force and the use of force and law enforcement and intelligence. And my students anyway, always come back to the idea that the basic problem solver, the basic tool is diplomacy. Because as somebody said at some point, diplomacy was invented in order for us to talk to people we don't like. And so I think it is a very basic tool. I do think that Americans do have a tendency actually to make lists and check them off and say this has been done. But I think that what we have learned, at least I watched this learning process, was that we realized that an awful lot of relationships are managing the relationships. And diplomacy is the way to manage relationships and to develop an understanding of the other side and understand that it isn't always easy to check something off a list. And diplomacy is, I think, it is the basic tool. There are a variety of ways of doing diplomacy. You can either kind of muddle along, or what I would do sometimes is, I had a way of doing this. I think what people forget is you actually begin a bilateral conversation in a normal human way. How are you? I'm glad to be in your country. And then ultimately, after some niceties, I used to say, I have come a long way, so I must be frank.
And dot, dot, dot.
And I think you really do, often diplomacy provides a way to deliver a message, but also to listen. And I think that's the major part. And then I think a really good negotiator, a good diplomat, is somebody who's able to put him or herself into the other party's shoes in order to be able to see what needs to be done to solve the problem.
I mean, there's been some criticism, including in European capitals, at the end of President Obama's first term. You know, where's America been leading? You know, what are the results? What has been achieved? And yet, if I were to put this through the prism you've just described, you could say that the first term under Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, there's been quite a bit of diplomacy as you describe it, listening, talking, especially in Southeast Asia. I mean, would you characterize it maybe that way? Is there an Obama doctrine emerging as such?
Well, I think that, frankly, without appearing overly partisan, I think that many of us felt that the Bush approach was one in which the United States was kind of telling everybody what to do that did not help America's reputation. And President Obama and Secretary Clinton, I think, wanted to make a real point of the fact that the world is better off and actually America's goals are better achieved if we do things in partnership with other countries. What we were talking about in terms of respect, relationships, etc. I would say that President Obama's middle name is actually partnership. Secretary Clinton, I think, was amazing in her capability of traveling and also making very clear that the relationships were important and that the relationships weren't just with governments, but also with the people of a country, so that people would understand what America was about, our desire to respond to the needs of whatever country they were in, and that building those relationships was very important. And based on the fact that the problems that are out there now, and by the way, I wrote a book called Memo to the President-elect at a time when I had no idea who the president was going to be. And in it, I laid out what I called were five big umbrella issues, which were how to deal with terrorists without creating more of them, how to deal with nuclear proliferation problems, the growing gap between the rich and the poor internationally, then the whole set of issues of environment, energy, global pandemics. And then the fifth issue was how to restore the good name of democracy. So just listing those, it's perfectly evident that the United States can't deal with those issues alone, that those are the kind that require partnerships and developing relationships. I ultimately did give the book to President Obama, and I inscribed it with the audacity to hope that this book might be useful. But I think that it is an approach in the 21st century of finding partners to deal with those global umbrella issues.
It's interesting, actually. I know you've also been involved with NATO's strategic concept, and there is a term going around the block at the moment of this idea of the U.S. forward partnering, you know, being a partner with others, but helping them take care of their own neighborhoods. And again, this maybe is another definition of
partnership. Well, I think there is partnership. And I think that, first of all, and I think people don't fully always appreciate this, Americans are not an imperial power. We are not occupiers. And our people, frankly, to a great extent, have to be persuaded to be internationally involved. It's not kind of a natural. And then so you put that together with the problems that I described, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out that you need partnership and alliance structures. And the new strategic concept had a lot to do with that. We discovered, I was asked to head that group of experts that worked on it, that actually NATO has more partners than it has members. And so it was kind of like a Lego game where, in fact, you can get different groups to help. So the Arab League, very involved in the kinds of things that we all did together in Libya, or the African Union, or a variety of other groupings that can, in fact, multiply the force of the greatest military alliance in the history of the world.
Secretary Albright, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today. I know that we can always get a little bit more of a dip into the experience that you bring to these topics through your books, not least of which is Prague Winter, which is now out in paperback, as I understand, having been issued in hardback this time last year, I presume.
Exactly.
So that'll put us into the roots of these issues through that period leading up to and through the Second World War. Well, you spent a lot of time in London.
I did. I actually spent the World War II here in an air raid shelter in the cellar in a house in Kensington Park Road.
Thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thank you so much.
Another British Public Radio presentation.